Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Horror coming up in this hour. Later on, A Corpse That Was, the story on The Haunting Hour. But right now, an audition program featuring one of the several forays that director Alfred Hitchcock made into radio with little success. Although a great broadcast next from May 11th, 1945 on the ABC Blue Network, the story is Malice Aforethought, starring Joseph Kearns.
I'd like to give you a thrill. Of sheer excitement from the man who makes the movies that everyone remembers. The famous director who gave you Spellbound, Suspicion, Rebecca, The Lady Vanishes. The gentleman they call the Cavalier of the Macabre, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock.
I'm a little worried about mysteries these days. I think we're getting altogether too many sinister-looking butlers, hands coming through sliding panels and such. You see, I'm interested in people, in characters, horrible characters. I like to crawl inside a man's mind, if I can possibly do so, and find out what makes him behave like a madman or an imbecile. That's why I took a fancy to this story by Francis Iles called Malice Aforethought. This fellow Iles doesn't tease you. He comes right out and tells you what happens. But he doesn't tell the why. He leaves that up to us, up to you and me. Well, let's have a listen, see what we can make of it. What do you say?
The prisoner will stand. Edmund Alfred Bickley, you are charged with this. Unless we have quiet, I shall ask the officer in charge to clear the courtroom. Edmund Alfred Bickley, you were charged with this indictment. That on the ninth day of April, 1947, at Wyvern's Cross, Long Island, you feloniously, willfully, and with malice aforethought, did kill and murder one Julia Elizabeth Mary Bickley. How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Gentlemen of the jury... Prisoner at the bar.
Doesn't look much like the sort of chap who'd murder his wife, does he? But you never can tell about these quiet, polite little men. Oh, I hope you don't mind my following this thing with you and making a few comments from time to time. I'll try not to get in the way.
The attorney for the prosecution will call the first witness.
Will the defendant take the stand?
You waive your constitutional rights not to testify.
I do.
Edmund Bickley, are we to understand that you are a doctor of medicine?
Well, I have conducted a general practice in Wyvern's Cross for 18 years.
Dr. Bickley, was your relationship with your wife, Julia, altogether friendly at the time of her unfortunate death?
I loved her. We were happily married for almost 20 years. Since her passing, my life has been completely empty without my dear wife, Julia. She was everything.
Your dear wife, Julia. I wonder, Dr. Bickley, I wonder if your marriage was as happy as you'd like to have the jury believe. Didn't dear Julia ever get on your nerves? Didn't you ever get sick and tired of dear Julia?
Enough to get back from your round a little earlier today. I've been suffering from a frightful headache, and there's so much to do. I can't conceive how you expect me to get everything done in time for our guests.
I'm sorry, Judith.
You're sorry? Well, really, Edmund, do you think your being sorry will get the work completed?
All right, tell me what you want done, Julia.
First of all, you'll have to take care of the tennis court.
So that's what you were married to, Dr. Bickley. That's dear Julia. How many tongues does she have in her head, Bickley? Sounds like at least half a dozen.
Tables out on the lawn and some chairs.
Julia, I don't think I'll be able to get all these things done.
My dear Edmund, they've got to be done. And before the guests begin to arrive, you'd better change your clothes.
Julia, have you ever thought that someday I might stop saying, yes, Julia, of course, Julia?
Edmund, that would be quite enough. I forbid you to think such thoughts.
Yes, Julia.
Yes, Julia, that seems to settle that. Or does it?
I've got to get rid of her. I've got to get free from Julia.
Oh, dear.
I know what I've got to do.
I've got to kill her. Bickley, old man, don't overdo it, you know. Murder's a serious business. If you get caught, it can be very annoying.
Hello, Bickley.
Hello, Lidston.
How's your practice?
Oh, fair enough. How are your patients getting on?
No complaints. Say, have you had any cases of uric poisoning lately?
No, not in the past few months.
Well, I've got old Mrs. Kirstenton, you know. And I found a new treatment that's practically cured her.
That's interesting, Doctor. What is it?
A vanadium compound.
Vanadium?
The only drawback is that it induces severe headaches. But it really clears out the poison.
Causes headaches, you say?
Similar to migraine, but only temporary. It doesn't taste bad, just a bit acid, like grapefruit.
Sounds like a useful formula to have in the laboratory. Lidston, could you order me some?
I've got more than I can use, Bickley. I'll send you over some.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Lidston. I'd like to see how it works.
I say now, Bickley, old man, what's the idea of pottering around in the kitchen so early in the morning?
Edmund?
Oh, yes, Julia.
What are you doing down there in the kitchen?
Oh, just fixing you a little breakfast, Julia, my dear.
Now, isn't that thoughtful of the doctor?
Ah, here you are, my darling. Breakfast in bed.
Well, is it a surprise? Now, really, Edmund, you know I don't much care for grapefruit.
Oh, you like this grapefruit, Julia. I fixed it especially.
I'll just bet you did. Oh, you're like that grapefruit, Julia. It's just what the doctor ordered.
What is it, Julia?
My head. It's splitting.
Oh? Are you getting one of your headaches again?
Oh, what a
headache. It's just one of my headaches, Edmund. This is dreadful. I can't stand the pain.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Oh, give me something, Edmund.
Well, I suppose I could give you an injection, Julia. A small one.
Get out your hypodermic needle, Doctor. There are times when that shiny bit of glass and steel can save a person's life. But that same little needle can kill a person, can't it, Doctor? As surely as a bullet through the head. Incidentally, Doctor, how much morphine would it take? 1 grain? 2 grains? 3 grains? Why, that's not enough to kill her.
Hold out your arm.
Yes, Edmund.
There.
Oh, thank you, Edmund.
Oh, I see, Dr. Bickley. You like suspense, too.
Madeline!
Now, who the devil is Madeline?
Madeline, are you home?
Who is it?
It's Edmund. May I come in?
Why, of course, Edmund. Come right on in, Ducky. The door's unlocked.
Ducky?
Hello, Edmund.
Hello.
Oh, Madeline. Madeline, darling, I've missed you so.
Please, Edmund, we're not alone.
What?
You know Dennis Bourne, don't you?
Doctor?
We've been swimming this morning over at East Hampton.
Yes. How are you, Dennis?
Fine, Doctor. And you? Dennis was just leaving.
Thanks for the beach party, Madeline. It was fun.
Goodbye, Danny.
See you all later. Goodbye, Doctor.
Yes. Goodbye. See here, Madeline, I hope you aren't wasting much time with that fellow.
Now, Ducky, you have no right to be jealous.
Of course, I have no claim on you, Madeline. But you know I'd marry you in an instant, darling, if things were different.
Yes, and things may be different, Madeline.
Oh, Edmund.
Sooner than you'd expect.
You're very sweet.
You know, I'm worried about Julia.
Oh?
She's been suffering from terrible headaches. And lately, she's been slipping into my laboratory and giving herself shots to relieve the pain. I'm afraid it's getting to be a habit.
How dreadful.
Dreadful?
Yes, I want to help Julia, but I just don't know what I can do.
Oh,
I think you're doing more than enough already.
Is that what you came here for, Ducky? To tell me about your wife?
No, Madeline. I came here to be with you.
That's quite a line you've got there, Ducky, for a man who's getting along in years. Well, it all adds up. Every morning, a grapefruit for Julia, a grapefruit a la Bickley, followed by a headache, followed by a hypodermic needle. And be sure you tell everyone, Doctor. Tell everyone in town about poor Julia's headaches and what she does to cure them.
I know, Edmund.
What?
I know what's causing these headaches of mine.
You do?
You're causing them.
I?
It's all the result of anxiety, Edmund. Anxiety over the shameful way you're carrying on with that Madeline Cranmere.
Oh. Oh, then you know about Madeline.
Oh, do you think I'm an utter fool? I have eyes and ears. This shameful affair must stop, Edmund, at once.
I'm in love with Madeline.
Oh, don't talk nonsense. Oh, my head. My head. Oh, Edmund, you must give me some relief.
Julia, I want you to give me a divorce so that I can marry the woman I love.
Oh. That's a wise move, Bickley. Give her a chance to get out of your life.
Julia.
Maybe you won't have to kill her after all.
Julia, I asked you a question. Will you give me a divorce?
No, I'll never give you a divorce. You'll remain married to me, Edmund, for as long as I live.
Oh. Odd that she should put it that way, isn't it, Bickley?
Oh, no. Give me something to relieve this pain.
Yes, Julia. Will you please hold a syringe for a moment, dear?
That was clever. It's safer if you have her fingerprints on the syringe. Now, how many are you going to give her this time, Doctor? 3 grains? 4? 5? Oh, take it easy, old chap. Isn't 10 grains of morphine a lethal dose? 11? 12? I say, Doctor, is this it? Is this the moment? 14? 15? My.
Hold out your arm.
Yes, Edmund.
There.
Well, so long, Julia. Nice day, isn't it, Bickley?
Madeline! Madeline, darling, are you home? Oh, hello there, Dennis.
Hello.
Where's Madeline?
She asked me to give you a message.
Oh?
She doesn't want to see you anymore. She's engaged to be married to me.
What? Where is she? Where is she? I've got to talk
she
to her.
She doesn't want to see you.
Madeline!
She doesn't
Madeline,
want to
where
see
are
you.
Madeline!
Edmund, you shouldn't have tried to see me.
Well, this is all nonsense, of course.
No, Edmund. I love Denny. That's all there is to it.
I'll tell you what you're going to do, Madeline.
Ducky, you're hurting me.
You're going to break off this ridiculous engagement. We'll drive to Connecticut tonight and be married. Immediately.
What about Julia?
Julia's dead.
Dead? Oh.
Oh, Dr. Bickley, you aren't supposed to know that Julia's dead. Yet?
Hello. Oh, yes, Dr. Bigley's here. Is there anything wrong? Oh. Well, that's dreadful. Yes, I'll tell him right away.
No rush, Dennis. He knows. And so does Madeline. lonesome, Doctor? House is pretty quiet now without Julia. It was a nice funeral, though. And those tears of yours were very nicely played, Doctor. Very effective scene. Isn't it remarkable how quiet a woman gets after you give her 15 grains of morphine?
Hello. I want to speak with Madeline Cranmere. I know perfectly well she's there, Dennis. And it's very important that I speak with her. Now, you please tell Madeline that I... Hello. Hello.
Wonder what Madeline is thinking, Doctor. Too bad you made that slip about Julia when you weren't supposed to know she was dead. Oh, well, maybe Madeline's forgotten about it. Maybe.
It wouldn't have happened if she hadn't thrown me over for that playboy. I hate her. I hate Madeline Cranmere.
Talking to yourself, Bickley?
Oh, Lidston. Hello.
Excuse me for coming straight in. I saw your light was on.
Yes, sit down. Well, I'm glad to see you, Doctor. How's your practice?
No complaints. Sorry about Julia. Must have been quite a shock.
Well, Lidston, we all have our burdens to bear.
Just how did it happen, Bickley? If it isn't too painful for you to talk about...
Oh, no, I don't mind. Of course, you heard all those ugly rumors that were going around about Julia giving herself injections of morphine. Well, she must have taken an overdose. That's all.
Too bad. Fine woman.
Oh, the best.
You can uncross your fingers now, Dr. Bickley.
Say, Bickley, remember that vanadium compound I sent you, the headache stuff?
What? Oh, yes, the antidote for uric poisoning.
Well, old Mrs. Kustenton's had a relapse, and I'm afraid I'll have to borrow some of it back from you. Hope you don't mind.
Why, it's all gone.
Oh? Did you have a case of uric poisoning, too? Who was it?
No, not exactly. I was making some experiments.
Oh, some experiments. Well, no matter. I'll order some more. I have to go on home, Bickley.
It's kind of you to stop by.
Getting late, you know.
Yes.
Say, Bickley.
Yes?
One other thing. What was it made Julia start taking morphine? Headaches?
Yes, a tumor of some sort or migraine. Well, we'll never know.
No, I don't suppose we ever shall. Well, good night, Bickley.
He's on to you. As sure as fate, Bickley, he's figured out exactly how you got rid of Julia. And if Lidston and Madeline Cranmere ever go to the police together, you're probably hanged. Pardon me, Doctor, I forgot. The state of New York employs electricity.
Well, it certainly was nice of you to come to my little party. I just thought we ought to establish friendly relations again all round.
Well, it was good of you to ask us, Dr. Bickley.
Well, frankly, Dennis, I hardly expected you.
But you didn't think I'd come alone, did you, Edmund, without my new husband?
Oh, have you and Dennis actually tied the knot? Well, now, isn't that grand? Please accept my congratulations.
Thank you, Doctor. Very sporting of you.
Not at all. Do you two know Dr. Lidston?
I don't believe we've met.
No.
This is Dennis Bourne and Madeline Cranmere. Oh, Mrs. Bourne, I always have...
Now, this is a curious thing to do, Dr. Bickley. What have you got up your sleeve? Deliberately bringing together the two people who can prove you're a murderer.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I'll just step out into the kitchen and... see if the refreshments are ready.
Oh, refreshments.
Oh, you're fixing the refreshments, are you, Doctor? What'll it be, grapefruit? Or aren't you going to bother with suspense this time?
I hope you all like deviled ham sandwiches.
Oh, I simply adore them.
Madeline, you don't know what you're saying. I have an idea. Why don't you go on a nice diet, old girl? Say, Bickley, what's that yellow stuff you're mixing with the mayonnaise? That stuff from the test tube? Are you putting a little extra devil into the deviled ham?
Well, here we are. Everybody fall to, help yourselves.
Oh, don't these look good?
Mm-hmm. They look almost good enough to eat. Almost.
Mm,
I'm going to eat one of these, even if it does spoil my dinner.
Dr. Lidston, you'll be amazed how many dinners that sandwich is going to spoil.
Hold on, Dr. Bickley. Don't I get any?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want a sandwich, Dennis?
I'm starved.
Well, I'll go out and fix you something else.
Oh, don't bother. I'll take one of these.
Oh, no,
You tried to stop him, Doctor. No reason why young Dennis should go the way of Lidston and Madeline. But what could you do?
Do you feel well enough to talk now, Dr. Bickley?
I had quite a distressing night. Afraid I must have eaten some spoiled meat that disagreed with me.
Hey, you're not the only person that had a bad night. That's why I have to talk to you, Doctor. I'm Lieutenant Russell, Homicide Squad.
Homicide? You mean some of my guests have died?
I didn't say that. You put two and two together pretty fast, Doctor. Why did you feed poisoned sandwich to Mr. and Mrs. Bourne and Dr. Lidston yesterday afternoon?
That's absurd. The meat was spoiled. That could have happened to anyone. Why, you can see for yourself. I'm sick of bed.
Do you have typhoid fever?
Typhoid?
We have it on pretty good authority, Doctor, that lethal quantities of typhoid fever germs don't usually breed on deviled ham sandwiches unless somebody puts them there.
Typhoid? How in the world could...
What happened, Bickley, old man? Did you put the wrong germs from the wrong test tube on the wrong deviled ham sandwiches?
Dr. Bickley, I'm afraid I'll have to arrest you on the charge of murder.
Did they both die? Madeline and Lidston both?
They're arrested on the charge of murdering your wife.
My wife?
Now, how the deuce did Julia pop up among the deviled ham sandwiches?
But you've no evidence, no evidence at all.
You shouldn't have said that, Bickley.
You'll hear the evidence, Doctor, when the time comes.
Order! We must have order in this court.
Court!
Proceed.
Will Dr. Harry Lidston take the stand, please? Dr. Lidston.
Dr. Lidston?
No, it's not a ghost, Bickley. It's your old friend Lidston in the flesh. He looks tired and he's lost about 20 pounds. But I'm afraid your diet of deviled ham sandwiches reduced him, but didn't quite finish him off. Too bad.
Dr. Lidston, do you know the prisoner at the bar?
I most certainly do.
What transactions have you had with the prisoner which might have a bearing on this case?
On the 14th of March, just past, I delivered to Dr. Bickley a quantity of a newly developed vanadium compound which is useful in counteracting uric poisoning. However, this compound also induces severe headaches, and it is my belief that Dr. Bickley employed this quantity of medicine.
Well, there it is, Bickley, right out in the open. A whole scheme you thought was so clever, so utterly beyond apprehension, and the incredible thing is the way that idiot Lidston has guessed everything.
Which caused her death.
Thank you, Dr. Lidston. Will Mrs. Madeline Bourne please take the stand? Mrs. Madeline Bourne.
Oh, this looks nasty, Bickley. Madeline got over the sandwiches, too. She is looking at you with a very friendly expression, Ducky. I see she's dressed all in black.
Mrs. Bourne, suppose you tell us, in your own words, exactly what happened on the second floor of your house in Wyvern Cross on the morning of the ninth day of April, 1947.
Well, the prisoner, Dr. Bickley, burst into my room and demanded that I break off my engagement with Dennis, my late husband. He said I must marry him. I asked him, what about his wife, Julia? And he replied, Julia is dead.
Mrs. Bourne, was this before or after Dr. Bickley received the telephone call informing him of his wife's death?
Immediately before, while the prisoner was speaking.
Seems to be getting a little warm in here, doesn't it, Doctor? All your affairs in order? Is your will all made out? Life insurance premiums paid up? It better be, because it's getting around in insurance circles that you're not a very good risk.
The defense will summarize.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
It is a scandalous outrage against justice that the defendant should even be on trial before you. Who is Dr. Bickley? An outstanding physician, public servant of long standing, man of unsullied reputation. A man whose
this sounds more like it, Bickley, old boy.
His wife, Julia, was unquestioned in the community. And what is the evidence against him? The dubious testimony of one Madeline Bourne, which cast some vague doubt over the exact moment at which Dr. Bickley learned of his dear wife's death. And as for the testimony of the prisoner's colleague, Dr. Lidston, his only evidence proves that the defendant was in possession of certain chemical compounds which every doctor of medicine in the United States is authorized to have in his laboratory. What sort of evidence is this? I represent to you that the prosecution's case against Dr. Bickley is nothing but guesswork, 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 and that Dr. Bickley is as innocent of this heinous crime as you or I.
Prisoner will stand to hear the verdict of this court.
Here it comes, Doc. Wyvern Cross or Sing Sing. Consultation room or the chair.
The jury finds the defendant not guilty. This court is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for a very fair trial. Well, thank you again. Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. Oh, goodbye, Lieutenant. Thank you, Paul.
Just a minute, Doctor.
Yes, Lieutenant?
It is my duty to arrest you on this indictment. That you feloniously and with malice of forethought did kill, by means of poisoned food, one Dennis Bourne.
Well, poor old Doc. He sort of liked Dennis. And he never meant for Denny to eat that deviled ham sandwich. But on the 19th of September, poor Dr. Bickley went to the chair for poisoning Dennis Bourne. Now, let that be a lesson to you. I tell you, murder's a serious business, and the slightest slip can be disastrous. As for me, I think I'll stick to motion picture directing. For a while, at least. The occupational hazards aren't quite so high.
Once Upon a Midnight on Tuned to Yesterday, featuring Alfred Hitchcock as narrator in an audition broadcast that didn't come to pass from May 11th, 1945 on ABC. The very same year that Hitchcock released his psychological thriller Spellbound with Ingrid Bergman and Gregory Peck. It's an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, and now a syndicated broadcast from 1945 of The Haunting Hour. Stay close to your radio for the story, A Corpse There Was.
No. No, stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery. A time when imagination is free and moves forward. Swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour. A Corpse There Was.
Listen to me. I've got to tell it to someone, and, well, I guess you've heard a lot of strange stories. I'm Catherine Holland. It all started about a year after I'd come to work for Martin Reed and Stephen Corey as the housekeeper. Oh, we'd have such fun, the three of us. Martin was forever making me promise that I'd be with them always. Always. I didn't know how long that could be.
You're only joking, huh, Kathy? You wouldn't leave us. You'll stay with us always, won't you?
Not if you keep doing that, Marty.
Oh, you'll get used to it, Kathy.
Oh, but cutting your own name on a tombstone, it's positively morbid.
I don't see that. If a cobbler can make his own shoes, then surely a stonecutter can make his own monument.
Well, that's true.
After all, a man must do something with his spare time. And you, Stephen, of all people, have no right to scoff at me. Imagine a cemetery caretaker who wanders through the graveyard day and night talking to the dead.
If the people I met outside the cemetery, my dear Martin, were as interesting as the people I meet inside, perhaps I wouldn't. Since there are only neighbors along this godforsaken road, and since I must get away from you occasionally...
Now, look here, enough is enough.
Are we going to let her boss us around, Martin? You nearly 60 and me twice her age?
That's right. You're 42, aren't you, Stephen?
Yep.
You know, I think for your next birthday, I'll start on a nice marble headstone for you.
Okay, I quit. I resign.
Oh, no, don't say that, Kathy. We need you, Stephen and I. Always before, our housekeepers were stout and rheumatic. You're so young. It was like all at once having the shades pulled up and the windows opened when you came. You won't leave us, will you, Kathy?
No, I won't leave you, Martin.
You promise?
I do. If you promise to take your medicine.
No, I told you, Kathy. I don't believe in that quack doctor. There's nothing wrong with my heart.
Oh, Martin, don't be stubborn.
It's not a matter of being stubborn. I know I'm perfectly all right.
How about those attacks you've had?
Well, they were indigestion.
You don't want to take that medicine because you and the doc have been enemies for years. You won't give him the satisfaction of treating you, even if it means...
Please, Kathy. Don't you think I'm old enough to know my own mind?
But Kathy's right, Martin. You should take your medicine.
Oh, now you start. I'm going for a walk.
I'll go with you.
I don't want company.
Now he's mad.
Oh, don't take it to heart. He'll get over it.
I wish he hadn't gone out in this weather.
Yeah, I think it's getting worse. I'll go call him back.
Stephen, what's that noise?
I don't know. But just outside the house... It's our cedar tree. That last flash of lightning struck it. There seems to be... Kathy.
What? Move away from the door so I can see too.
No, Kathy, please. Stay in here a minute. I'll go out.
Oh, I'll go with you.
I think I see something beside the cedar. Come on, Kathy.
Stephen, it can't be.
Yes, Kathy. It's Martin. He's dead.
The tree?
It didn't touch him. He died from the shock of it falling so close. It was heartbreaking.
Strange, isn't it? The last tombstone he ever carved was his own. We buried Martin the next evening. There weren't many mourners. We lived too far from town to be well acquainted. At last, the few who'd come went away and left Stephen and me alone at the grave. They've all gone.
Your eyes are all red, Kathy.
Do you suppose he likes where we buried him? Right across the road from the house?
I'm sure he does. He can sort of watch us from here if he gets lonely.
It won't be us much longer, Stephen.
What do you mean?
Well, I can't stay here with just you. It isn't proper.
Kathy, you know I wouldn't...
Oh, I know, but what'll people think?
I don't care about people. They're not important.
Well, they are to me. I have a good reputation, Stephen, and I don't...
Kathy, don't leave me.
Oh, but I must.
Losing Martin was unbearable, but if I lost you, I'd have nothing left.
I'm sorry, Stephen.
There'd be no one to care if I live or die. If you go, I'll be all alone.
You'll find another housekeeper.
Housekeeper? Oh, Kathy, dearest, don't be such a little fool.
I'm not a fool.
You are if you can't see how much I love you.
You love me? Oh, no.
How could I help it? You're sweet and fresh and lovely. And I never knew before what joy it was to watch a woman. Anything you do, the way you walk and laugh, even the way you get angry, it's beautiful.
Oh, keep away from me. I don't know what's come over you.
I was content just having you about the house, being near you. But now, oh, my darling, you mustn't go away.
Oh, please don't look at me like that. Please, Stephen.
Dearest, let's get married. I'll make you happy.
No, I don't love you. Don't touch me. Oh, I like you a lot. I'm very fond of you, but... Well, it's not love. I could never love you.
Why, Kathy? I'll make you a good husband.
Oh, no, Stephen, no. You're twice my age.
But I'd worship you, Kathy, dearest.
Oh, will you quit bawling Kathy, dearest, at me like a lost lamb? I'm going to the house and pack my things.
I won't let you go. You belong to me.
I don't belong to anyone. If you don't get out of my way, I'll throw this rock at you.
There's someone else. You love someone else.
No, no, Stephen, I just don't love you. Don't come near me. I'll throw it, I swear.
Kathy, no!
I told you I would, didn't I? Why couldn't you believe me? Well, get up. Stephen. He was lying on his back, motionless. I bent over him and... his face. The rock had caught him between the eyes. I couldn't think. I was terrified. I only knew that Stephen was dead, that I had killed him. A murderess, that's what everybody would say. They'd put me on trial, all those faces gaping at me like I wasn't human, and then they'd... No. I had to get out of here. The road past the graveyard. If I followed it, I'd reach the main highway. I'd run. I'd run so fast, no one would catch me. It was dark. The body wouldn't be found till morning. By then, I'd be far away. Had to keep moving. Had to. Where could I go? Where could I hide? Flying down the road for hours and hours, till my legs were numb and my heart tearing and my chest deafening me with its thunder. No, that wasn't my heart. It was a car. They were looking for me. Somehow they'd found Stephen already. Oh, it was getting nearer and nearer. I slipped behind a tree. Police at all. Picnickers. Oh, the only ones who might have seen me. They'll forget they even passed this way once they're safe at home. Safe at home. Suddenly I realized what a fool I'd been. I couldn't escape a police dragnet by running away. They'd never stop looking for me. The best place to hide was at home. Why, of course. I'd gone back to the house from the funeral and straight to bed. Stephen had decided to stay at the grave a while longer. Everyone in town knew he liked to wander through the cemetery, and especially tonight, with Martin just buried. He must have caught a prowler, and the man had thrown a rock at him. That's how it happened. I felt perfectly calm. I turned around and started back. The sky had been cloudy all evening, but as I walked up the road toward home, it cleared. I remember how lovely the moonlight looked, spilling down the steps of the house. I started to climb them. Suddenly, I had an impelling desire to see Stephen's body. Well, I tried to fight it, but the thought of him, cold and crumpled, lying like some cast-off doll in an attic, hypnotized me. I went down the stairs and started across the road. He had been lying at the foot of Martin's grave, I remembered. From where I was, I couldn't make out the body. Oh, that wasn't right. The old man was buried directly across from the house. I should be able to see Stephen. I slipped through the gate, hurried to where the corpse had lain. It was gone. There wasn't a trace of it. I dropped to my hands and knees, searching about the new mound of earth for some proof that it hadn't all been a nightmare, that I'd really killed Stephen. There wasn't anything. No matted grass where the blood should have dried, nothing fallen from his pockets, not even the stone with which I'd struck him. And it was so quiet, so deathly quiet, with the moon whitewashing Martin's headstone, and the one next to it, the one next to it. But there hadn't been any grave there before. And this one was fresh as Martin's. I slowly raised my eyes and looked at the tombstone.
Stephen Corey, born May 9th, 1901. Died April 20th, 1944.
Why, I'd know that carving anywhere. Martin was dead. But Martin had made that gravestone. And yet, how could Martin have carved that headstone? He'd not made one for Stephen before he died. I knew that. Still, Stephen had been buried, and the date on the monument was right. Oh, I felt the answer, but I pushed it back away from my mind. It couldn't be true that Martin had kept his promise even now and had carved the stone. That these dead who were Stephen's friends had buried him. Had he loved me so, he wouldn't make me pay for what I'd done. Did he plead with them to cover him so I'd not be found out? I didn't know. I was paralyzed with fright. I had to get out of here back to the house before I lost my sanity. I don't know how long I lay there, cowering in my bed. At last, the darkness of the night closed in about me, and I slept. But then, out of the darkness, the doorbell rang. Sharp sound, a streak of fear over my flesh. The police had come. Stephen's grave had been discovered. I had to go to the door.
Are you Catherine Holland? I'm Estelle Bailey, Martin's sister.
Oh, yes, I should have known. Come in, Mrs. Bailey.
Stephen sent me a telegram this afternoon about Martin's death, and I took the first train out here. I'm sorry if I woke you.
Oh, that's quite all right. Come in. I know it's been a long trip. Perhaps I can fix you a bite to eat.
No, thank you. I'd like you to take me to see the grave right away.
Martin's grave? Now?
Miss Holland, I hadn't seen Martin for 9 years. I'm ashamed of that, and I want to rectify it now as soon as I can. If you won't take me, perhaps Mr. Corey will.
Oh, he's not here. He's in town.
Well, I'll wait up till he comes in.
Oh, you'll wait a long time.
I don't understand.
Well, Stephen was quite shocked by your brother's death, you know, and, well, he felt he had to get away from this house, so, well, he mightn't be back tonight.
But if he went into town, why didn't he meet me at the station as he wrote he would?
Well, I don't know. Every moment she sat there, she'd think more and more about Stephen's absence. I had to distract her the only way I could. I had to take the chance that she wouldn't notice that other headstone. But if she did notice it, I would have to kill her, too. But just then, something happened to spare us both.
Oh, good heavens! Oh, look, it's raining again.
Yes, the moon's gone in. It's pitch black outside.
Then there's no use going into the cemetery, I suppose.
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Bailey. What a shame. Finally, she went upstairs. I waited until I knew she slept. Then I took a spade and crept across to the cemetery. It was wet and cold, but I didn't notice the weather. For I had a scheme. A very clever scheme. I was going to dig up someone else's headstone as well as Stephen's and switch the two. I couldn't disguise his new-made grave, but at least I'd conceal who was buried there. It was just before dawn when I slipped back to the house. Mrs. Bailey woke me about 8, and together we went into the cemetery. I came up level with the graves and... Oh, no. No, it couldn't be. Why, I'd switched them last night.
Stephen Corey, born May 9th, 1901. Died April 20th, 1944.
His headstone. Exactly where it had been before. But I had dug it up. There were blisters on my hands to prove it. Mrs. Bailey, had she noticed? No. She'd gone right to her brother's grave and stood staring at it, wiping away the tears.
I'm very glad of one thing, Miss Holland, that Martin is buried a little apart from everyone else. He liked to be alone most of the time, you know. Even in death, he would prefer solitude and being isolated from all the others.
Solitude? Isolated from all the others. But Stephen was lying right by his side. She couldn't see Stephen's headstone. It was incredible, but it was true.
Come, Miss Holland, it's raining. We might as well go now. I'll take the early train back to the city.
After she'd gone, the house was empty, yet full of a screaming silence. And I sat looking out at the grayness of the lonesome day. Had there really been a grave at all? Growing inside me was a grim fascination to see. The mud sucked at my shoes. Through the dusk, I walked determinedly toward that spot where the headstone stood. I slipped through the fence. Then I was standing beside the tree, leaning against it. For I couldn't believe what I saw. There, beside the others, stood a third headstone. And stretching almost at my feet, a freshly dug grave. Even before I crept forward to see, I knew what the plaque would say. Catherine Holland, born June 7th, 1923, dead April 21st, 1945. Tonight, April 21st, that was tonight, and I was still alive. Martin, listen to me wherever you are. I said I'd be with you always, but you can't force me to follow you. You can't force me to follow you. Tears filled my eyes. I took hold of the hateful stone and tried to flatten it into the ground, And through the tears, I saw the dark bruises on my hands. Bruises on my hands, but it wasn't possible that... I touched one of the dark splotches. It rubbed away. Then the truth went through my mind. I fell to my knees. The letters I thought were carved into the stone. They too were blurred. I drew my finger along my name. It was lettered in black crayon. Thick, archaic lettering. Darker toward the middle than at the edges. Giving the illusion of depth. Giving the illusion of being cut into the stone. Then that's how Stephen's headstone was made. That's how. I stood up. The earth fell over me like a cold, wet sheet. Behind this adventure was a human being. A being like myself. Then I saw the thing in the grass, sending a tiny sparkle toward the dust-filled sky, and greedily I picked it up. A copper-colored metal cap from an eyebrow pencil. So that was how the letters had been drawn. That was how this thing had happened. Then I knew who had done it. And even before I turned to look, I knew she was standing there, staring at me, unmoving, a thin smile on her lips, her eyebrows thin too, penciled on with surety and deftness.
Turn around, Miss Holland. I see you have guessed the truth.
It was you. You killed him.
But do you think my conscience will hurt me as yours does? Would it make your death any easier to know you didn't kill Stephen Corey?
I don't understand you.
I'm telling you the truth. I came into the cemetery just as the last visitor left, and I saw you throw the rock at Corey. I saw you run for the road. You hadn't killed him, Miss Holland. He was only unconscious. But I made sure he was dead before I buried him.
Then you dug the grave here. That spade in your hand.
Will serve a double purpose. I shall kill you with it.
Just as you murdered Corey. Why? Why did you kill him?
Because Martin had willed all the family property to Corey, with the provision that when he died, it would return to me. I knew if his body weren't discovered, they'd think you and he had run away together. Then I'd have to wait for him to be declared legally dead.
And so you put up the plaque.
I felt sure I could persuade the county coroner to file a death certificate quietly. Then I'd show my lawyer the grave, show him that Corey, too, was dead. But you came back, so I have to kill you, too. Now you know the truth. Your time has come.
That spade, Mrs. Bailey.
It's for you, Miss Holland.
Stay back from me. Stay back.
I'm going to kill you.
I'm not afraid, Mrs. Bailey. You're real. I can fight you.
This will be your grave, and I shall bury you in it.
Give me that spade. Give it to me.
Go.
Oh, here. I said that spade. Daly. My eyes were crowded with flashes of blackness. I lay on the ground, feeling the cold, wet earth against my cheek. Without warning, it had happened. One wall of the grave gave way, and she lost her balance and fell forward into the gaping hole. Dirt from the mound began rolling down, clods of it covering the edges of her long skirt. And she lay still, silenced, at the bottom of the grave. A few wet clods of earth were still slowly tumbling down, as if they had an intelligence of their own, an intelligence that told them to bury the dead. Bury the dead. For she was dead, and she had died instantly. Her neck twisted beneath her loosened, flowing hair that hid the hideous sight of her eyebrows, thin and long. Her neck was broken, and she lay in the grave she had meant for me. Perhaps, now I've told it, I can forget the horror of what's happened. But not soon. Not soon. One way Martin was right. In my brain, he and Stephen will be with me. Always.
The Haunting Hour on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1945. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levionier. Thanks for tuning in.